So I'll be talking today about one small component of a large evaluation that we're doing here in Massachusetts to better look at our patient-centered medical home initiative. So I have nothing to disclose, so I'll give you a brief overview of the evaluation and the methods we used, present some highlights of our results, and then offer some conclusions. So we are undertaking an evaluation of a three-year initiative that is seeking to expand the use of patient-centered medical homes in primary care. And for those of you who are not familiar with what a PCMH is, it's really a model of delivering primary care that is based on a multidisciplinary team with a focus on quality and an increase in patient engagement, and oftentimes accompanied with a payment reform element. And so this evaluation is using patient surveys, staff satisfaction surveys, a claims analysis, and a qualitative component. And the qualitative component is what I'm going to be talking about today, and is what that first evaluation question sought to examine better. So the first question was to understand to what extent do practices transform to become medical homes. So in order to answer that question, we utilize case study methodology. There are 45 practices involved in this multi-payer initiative, and it wasn't feasible for us to visit all 45 sites, so we had to determine how we were going to be picking the sites that we did. And so we decided to look at their level of change and achievement over the course of their time in the project. And so we looked at change and achievement as measured by an instrument called the Medical Home Implementation Quotient. And this is a pretty widely used instrument developed by a company called TransferMed that many practices across the country are using to assess their level of medical homeness. And so this instrument was administered at baseline and at midpoint. And so we looked at change in scores between those two points in time. So at the end of the day, we ended up with eight sites. We selected five high change rate practices and three low change rate practices. And we conducted 28 interviews across those eight sites. At each site, we interviewed at least one clinical lead, and these included the medical director, a physician champion, and we also interviewed some support staff, which included medical assistants, nurses, administrative folks, etc. All the interviews were audio recorded and transcribed and uploaded into a qualitative software analysis package called Atlas TI. We had a code dictionary that we used that was primarily driven by the interview questions that we asked. And we had two evaluators look at each of the transcripts, and we utilized a consensus approach for data coding and identifying themes. So we certainly learned a lot during our analyses, and so I'm just going to be highlighting a few results for you today. So the first theme I want to talk about is the adoption of core competencies. So core competencies are what this initiative has identified as what each practice has to have in place in order to be considered a medical home. So these are things like having team-based care, like engaging your patient in goal setting, like having a process in place to follow up on referrals. And so there's 12 core competencies. Some of them are organizationally focused and some are patient-focused. And so the initiative said, okay, go ahead and work on all of these. And that was hard to do. Initiating change on 12 different things at the same time was nearly impossible. And so sites really kind of picked and chose which competencies they felt were most important to get in place first. And those are the ones that you see there. Doing team-based care, so identifying who are the people who are going to be taking care of a discrete panel of patients. Planned visits and follow-up care. So identifying who is coming in every day, what they're coming in for, and what else you may be able to do for them that day. Is it time for a flu shot? If they're diabetic, let's do a foot check, etc. And then integrated care management. Each site had to hire a nurse-level care manager to do care coordination and care management for their high-risk patients. The second theme was about the importance of generating buy-in across all levels of staff. So leadership support was identified as critical to success. And this leadership support was needed at two different levels. The first level was at the executive level. And so this meant having people like your CEO and your CMO put money where their mouth is and really support this initiative with resources and with allowing time for staff to work on it. The other type of leadership identified as important was kind of the day-to-day leader who was making sure that the work was getting done. That was motivating staff to do your work plans, to do your PDSA cycles, and move the project forward. Involving all staff levels in decision making was key. I think as we can all appreciate, the more input we have into making decisions, the more we feel invested in the success of the project. And so involving everybody from your receptionist to your physicians and to the types of changes that are going to be made and how those changes should be implemented was important. So some barriers for buy-in was the fatigue that many people felt about all of the changes that were happening at once with this project. And I hope I don't offend anybody in the audience, but we did hear that physicians were particularly the staff type that was most resistant to change. Sorry. Nobody believes that. What a surprise. So the third theme I want to talk about is the need for practices to assess their current staffing levels and seeing how they can better maximize staffing levels to become a true patient-centered medical home. So because the idea of teams was so important, teams can no longer be physician-driven. They need to be team-driven. And oftentimes, teams needed to be supplemented with people like medical assistants and care managers. And once you had a clear team in place taking care of a discrete panel of patients, this was an opportunity for practices to take a look at who was doing what and figure out how tasks could be better redistributed among the staff on the team. So in many instances, medical assistants were now administering a depression screening instead of having the physician do it. Or medical assistants were now responsible for making sure that referral appointments were set up for their patients. Some barriers to this was that it's hard for practices, particularly smaller ones, to invest in people who aren't billing. So, you know, if you're not a physician or a nurse practitioner or somebody else who can bill, it's hard to find the resources available to hire non-revenue generating staff. And the current fee-for-service model of payment really isn't aligned with team-based care. And the last theme I'm going to talk about is the importance of an electronic medical record to drive a lot of this patient-centered medical home work. So at the beginning of this initiative, a little bit over 2 years ago, sites were in very different places with their EMRs. Some sites didn't have one, and some sites had one and were using one. And so all sites had to figure out how can they best utilize an EMR to move their practice towards becoming a patient-centered medical home. And so a lot of times practices would assess, you know, what their EMR is currently able to give them, and we're trying to identify changes. So like, is my EMR currently able to give me a care plan? Is there a care plan template in there that I can use? If not, do I have the resources within my organization to make those changes to my IT system? In some cases, that was easy to do. In some cases where they're affiliated with a large provider network, where one change for them and one change for everybody was much more difficult. So the ability to make changes to their EMR varied. So just to wrap up here, some limitations. Obviously, we only did 8 out of the 45 sites that were enrolled in this initiative, so we're limited with that. And the sites that we did select may not represent the highest and lowest in change and achievement. We selected 8 sites, and 5 out of those 8 told us, no, thank you, we don't want you to come visit us. So what that means, I don't know, but I think it was interesting that we had such a high refusal rate for people that were enrolled in this initiative. And we, the only clarification we gave for sites about who we wanted to interview was we wanted people in those two buckets. We wanted, you know, a clinical leader, and we wanted a support staff. But the site themselves determined who it would be that we would interview. So to offer some conclusions, as I mentioned, there's 12 core competencies that are well aligned but not perfectly aligned with what the NCQA core competencies are. And it's the organizational-based ones that are being addressed before the patient-level competency. So practices seem to feel that they have more control over what they can change within the organization versus how can we better work with patients to identify self-management goals, or how can we improve our patient education techniques. The transformation to working in a team has been the biggest challenge for practices, but also has been the most rewarding. Practices were used to kind of having a physician, you know, one day an MA is going to work with this physician, the next day it'll work with that physician. And now there's a very clear-cut team. This physician works with this MA, with this care manager, maybe this nurse, and this receptionist is there to help them with their any administrative tasks. So that's been a big change for how practices operate, but also very rewarding, particularly for the MAs, whose role probably has been changed the most, and given they've been given a lot more meaningful tasks to do, much more tasks related to patient care. Having a robust EMR is really a great facilitator to moving a lot of this work forward. An EMR is able to give you a lot of the data you need for quality improvement purposes and to see where you are in your progress to becoming a patient-centered medical home. And the last point I want to make here is that there's 45 practices in this initiative and 45 different ways of becoming a patient-centered medical home. So there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Practices are taking different ways to get there, but they're all making progress in doing so. So this is my last slide, which I won't spend too much time on, but it kind of gives some examples of what these practices looked like before this project started and what they look like now 2+ years into it. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.